What we're going to talk about in this session is actually engaging the affiliates in rural public health education and activities. And this session is sponsored by the Council of Affiliates, so hence the emphasis on affiliate interaction. So without further ado, I'll go ahead and give you an idea about how the session is going to be organized and what we're going to be talking about. But I do need to confer with my speakers and ask, do you want to be individually introduced and then take questions, or take questions as a panel? Do you have a preference?
I have no preference.
Okay. So what we'll do is I'll introduce the speakers, and then we'll take questions as a panel at the end. Okay? So what they're going to be doing today is to share with you the results of the Rural Healthy People 2020. It is a separate publication, kind of based on the principles of the bigger, more well-known Healthy People 2020 document. They're going to be going over the top 10 health focus areas and how those differed by census regions. And then they'll move into a discussion of how the project can use different state affiliates to get their messages out. And the whole reason for doing this is by channeling everybody's efforts throughout each affiliate, because almost, I think all affiliates have some rural area somewhere. I know Texas, as big as we are, we have rural, we have really, really urban, we have kind of urban, but we have some, a lot of different variety, and I'm very certain that that's the same way in other states. And by coming together and channeling the efforts into those areas of most concern, then the most promising types of interventions can be then employed and using a common set of metrics to do so, so that different measurements in different areas can actually be compared. So with that, I will introduce the first speaker, Dr. Jane Bolin. She is from the great state of Texas. I don't think I ever introduced myself. I'm Catherine Cooksley. I'll be your moderator. And I'm from the great state of Texas. Sorry about that. I've always been a little disorganized. Dr. Bolin is with the School of Rural Public Health, one of the founders of the school, correct? If I'm not, didn't you?
I was there pretty early.
Yeah, I thought so. She's the director of the Southwest Rural Health Research Center and has applied academic research experience in rural and minority health disparities and the problems of chronic diseases as they affect rural minority and underserved populations. Dr. Bolin recently received a really large $2.74 million colon cancer screening prevention grant in Texas to address the need for rural and underserved residents to access colon cancer screening for improved patient care. She's also serving as an evaluator for Project ARCH, which is a VA program that's designed to promote access for veterans who live away from the VA facilities. With degrees in nursing, law, and health services research, she has served as PI, co-PI, and co-investigator on several state and federal grants. Dr. Bolin also served as a PI on a chronic disease management study in Corpus Christi, Texas, and a co-PI on a CDC-funded Prevention Research Center core study evaluation of chronic disease management of programs in rural and underserved regions of Texas. She's also been a co-PI on a CTSA, which she can tell you what that means, I forget, P20 planning grant for establishing the clinical this is what it means, Clinical Translational Science and Research Institute. I knew that at one point in my life. Dr. Boland, please.
We appreciate the opportunity to share and report to you all about our multi-year efforts to report on or to pursue rural healthy people in tandem with Healthy People 2020. And Dr. Gail Bellamy and I have been working together on this this new decade, the 2020 decade, now for over 3 years. We have got some great results to share. And then I'm going to go first today to talk about the workforce issues associated with the identified needs that came that were have been fleshed out as a result of the survey. And then Dr. Bellamy will report on the survey, the results itself, and be reporting on the differences by region as well as census region as well as Department of Health and Human Services region. And then Dr. Lash will conclude with Veterans Administration applied reflections and findings from what they're doing. So we thought that might be the best way to go. And I have no direct financial interest in this. It's required disclosure, and actually our school has generously funded this phase of it, so we're grateful for that. So in this initial presentation, I just want to talk about how Rural Healthy People 2020 and the findings will help you, your constituents, folks in your state, identify, based on the survey, what public health workforce funding needs there might be to take back to the legislature, to apply for grants and training, stipends, those sorts of things. I also want to discuss how all of this will flesh out in light of the Affordable Care Act and what has been what is targeted to be funded in the Affordable Care Act. Hopefully that will get they'll get all the kinks worked out in that, and then apply this to talking about at the end with you all about what the rural health workforce priorities may be. And so we would be very interested in hearing your reflections based on your experience and where you're practicing. So little history, Rural Healthy People 2010 was originally funded by the Office of Rural Health Policy, and it consisted of three volumes, which were based on a national survey done back in 2001 and 2002. And it identified national priorities based on, again, Healthy People 2010 at that time. And so rural stakeholders voted on what were the most critical issues that they felt were a priority in their rural areas. And so and it's still available on our website. A lot of rural focused classes are required to download it. It is available through the Southwest Rural Health Research Center. We also have up there models for practice, which are based both by topic area as well as state by state, those who have identified models that work in rural areas. So those three are still out there. So in our planning for Rural Healthy People 2020, what we did was basically use the same methodology, add a few extra questions, and this time it was exclusively web-based and launched through national websites and supported by the National Rural Health Association, the National Organization of State Offices of Rural Health, the NOSORs, the AHEX, and other state offices of rural health that we knew about and could get the message out to. So we launched the survey in December of 2010. At that time, we had what I felt was an excellent response of 755 respondents. But what we noticed after we went through the state-by-state response rates is that there were several states that, especially in the Southeast, where there are particularly high rates of certain chronic diseases, that hadn't really responded very well. So we redoubled our efforts in the spring of 2012. We held a national webinar that targeted sponsored by the NOSORs, the National Organizations for State Offices of Rural Health. We sent letters out to state health officers. We publicized it. And in sum, the total response of the two combined surveys again, it was just a relaunch of the original, resulted in an addition in 1,214 respondents. Here is a breakdown by state. You see that two states in particular, Ohio and Texas and Missouri and several others, had fairly healthy response rates in terms of stakeholders, rural stakeholders that responded. So you see there that here the states with 10 or more, and some had just incredible response rates. But on the flip side, we had some states that had only one respondent. So in terms of representation by those individual states, despite our efforts to redouble and solicit responses, they are what they are. But that, nevertheless, the results are very instructive in terms of the top 10 rural healthy people 2020 priorities based on what the respondents identified. And Gail's going to go over this again in more detail and break it out, flesh it out, because my focus from here on out will be what are the public health workforce areas. But you see here, by and large, access to quality health insurance or quality health care services is, again, in this decade, the most frequently identified priority for rural areas, followed by nutrition and weight status, diabetes, and mental health and mental care services. Those are all very nearly even in terms of the responses, followed by substance abuse, heart disease and stroke, physical activity and health, older adults, maternal, infant, and child care issues, and tobacco use. Those are the top 10. Here's a breakdown of the top 20. You can see there how these broke out. And what was interesting to us in terms of how these changed between 2010 and 2020, or whether they stayed the same, moved up, or moved down. And here's a breakdown of that, whether they stayed the same. The pink designates those that moved up in terms of priority. And again, Dr. Bellamy will go into this in more detail. But these just reflect the changes over the past decade, where respondents came in terms of their priorities differently this decade. So there are not many surprises, but there are a lot of critical needs there in terms of rural areas, especially when we think about the fact that most often medically underserved areas and health professional shortage areas are most frequently in rural areas, although there are the barren wastelands in large urban areas. By and large, it's the rural areas where it's most difficult to find qualified health care providers and the range of service providers that can address the needs. So in terms of workforce priorities, access to care has been and continues to be the top priority for rural areas. Prevention and care management models are going to be needed in rural areas because of the number of chronic diseases that have been identified, and we need model programs that have been proven effective that we can disseminate, help rural stakeholders develop for purposes of grant applications and or targeted legislative funding needs that they could take back to their state legislatures or county programs and say, you know, here's the data on this. These have been identified in our area, in our region, and we've got the data here to back that up. However, unfortunately, there have been some significant, huge budget cuts that have resulted in significant workforce shortages, forced difficult decisions at state, local, territorial, and tribal public health agencies, often resulting in far fewer services. The APHA reported in 2011 that among state agencies, nearly 9 out of 10, 89%, had reduced services between 2008 and 2010, especially programs related to health promotion, disease-specific interventions, and laboratory services. So despite the, gnawing need for healthcare providers, a broadening the public health workforce, there continue to be budget cuts. And most frequently, in terms of focusing on rural healthcare, we look at providers, and not often enough on public health as a whole, but specifically within public health, on the provider side, But the public health grid is expansive, is complicated, and with the expanded push to bring in electronic health records that can be shared between providers to make healthcare more efficient and less duplication, there are even more significant challenges, and Rural Healthy People recognizes that. I mean, the increasing sophistication and the expanded knowledge that rural health providers need is growing rather than becoming easier to navigate through. So what I did in terms of looking at this issue based on what we found in the survey was that we continue to see significant shortages. And so when we just look at medically underserved areas generally, and the most current up-to-date as of July 2013, you see there are just vast swaths of the United States that are medically underserved. They don't have enough in terms of all types of providers, and some have been governor designated, but just general recognition by HRSA of these areas being in dire need of healthcare providers. So in terms of the Affordable Care Act and funding needs, we certainly have a lot of work to do. In terms of clinician primary health care in particular, which is, of course, the focus of the Affordable Care Act, you'll see here that the darkest maroon are the most significant needy areas, followed up through the light pink, but nevertheless, those designate the health professional shortage areas. Now, I know that yellow either has been withdrawn or there's no data, and I can tell you down on the tip of Texas, down in Brownsville, it is one of the poorest parts of the United States. I mean, they probably don't even have people to collect data. That's why it's not up there. And you can probably look at your state and say, yeah, I know that if you're seeing a yellow, that they're just not recording. They don't have the capacity to do it. But these are the health professional shortage areas. As of actually, and that's about 3 years old. So here are the designated health professional shortage areas for dental care. The number of dentists just needed to bring the number of available dentists in line with what it takes to address the needs of a population within a state. Some are not as bad as others, but I look at some of them and think, wow, they're going to have to do a lot of training between now and then, given retirements, to get this. And then counties with no doctor's offices. The darkest yellow is very high need, followed by yellow high need. And so, you know, you can look there and say there are a lot of areas that don't even have a physician's office. And I don't know if that encompasses nurse practitioners or a physician's assistant as well, but these are just maps that are available. So the Department of Health and Human Services has developed objectives in terms of workforce priorities, and they want to, and this is on their website, they want to invest in the workforce to meet, of course, the needs of both today and tomorrow, and ensure that our healthcare workforce can meet the demands of the populations that we have, strengthen our human service workforce, and improve across all of the various types of service settings, ranging from national all the way to state, local, tribal, and specifically improve the ability to track and survey and bring epidemiology accounting into the capacity of each of these regions. So we come back to the identified top 20 rural health priorities, and I pose the question, so what are the workforce priorities in these areas, and what should we be targeting based on what we hopefully will see come about as a result of the Affordable Care Act? And literally, we're going to need, in each of these start areas, we are going to need more healthcare workers in all of these. And the only reason I didn't start tobacco use or educational community-based programs and quality of life and well-being is that, well, there's people in education that are already in those areas, and there's a crossover that I can't begin to quantify, or in terms of tobacco cessation and counseling, you know, who knows but I'm thinking about actual healthcare workers and who can address the needs in these areas. But literally in every area, we're going to need more public health workers and actual healthcare providers. So we pose the question, will the Affordable Care Act provide any kind of relief? What's built into it? What will we hopefully see in terms of the Affordable Care Act? Well, the goal that is talked about as soon as things come online and it's fully implemented is that the goal is to, with the dollars that are provided through the mechanism that has been set up, is to provide funding for prevention and to expand and improve our public health infrastructure, to establish a national prevention council and strategy, strategizing in terms of what will be our national priorities in terms of prevention and establishing the kind of health workforce that we need. Community health needs assessments should be part of it. Community and school-based health center funding to more effectively merge public health and primary care workforce development, to target health equity promotion and public health research, public education campaigns, menu labeling, all the things that we normally equate with public health infrastructure. According to the APHA issue brief published in 2012, the Affordable Care Act will hopefully bring a much-needed investment into prevention because it does contain provisions for mandatory funding for public health. And it's meant to supplement, not supplant, existing funding. And it also recognized that the public health system is still underfunded, but at least it's a start. The National Rural Health Association recently published a policy brief documenting that as of 2025, they project 124,000 full-time positions will be needed. The Council of Graduate Medical Education estimates that there will be a shortage of 200,000. So there's a swing of 75,000 physicians in terms of a shortage, with a focus on primary care providers. The aging of the nursing workforce, who are older than the age of 40 years, is estimated to grow significantly. And they also, the Council on Graduate Medical Education estimates that by 2025, there'll be close to 1 million nurses needed to address the needs. There's a severe shortage of rural pharmacists. Many rural pharmacies have closed, and so those that do need medications are often not in a position to be able to get to a pharmacy in order to fill much-needed prescriptions, unless they manage diabetes or to get their test strips or to do the kinds of things. So that is a significant need in terms of ensuring that we have pharmacy services available. Extremely severe shortage of rural dentists, and there's a generally recognized poor recruitment and retention of the rural workforce generally. But built into the Affordable Care Act, we recognize that we still face formidable challenges. We're still, in terms of rural priorities, still way behind our urban counterparts in terms of the necessary infrastructure, and we're so spread out, diversified, and very, there's so many regional differences. You know, what's rural in Alaska is far different from what's rural in Brownsville, Texas, or what's rural in Caribou, Maine. There are just so many differences in the makeup of what each region's rural workforce consists of. But according to a study put out by the Michigan Center for Health Professions, they found that there should be improved dollars for recruitment and training of primary care, public health, nursing, and other health professionals, and that there should be an increase in the number of healthcare professionals coinciding with the Affordable Care Act, and targeted training through either loan forgiveness and or training stipends, training center grants to institutions to increase the number and enhance the training of faculty in health professional training institutions. And they also want to see, much like the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, innovation grants, targeted focused, innovative strategies that will work in rural areas where it's so hard to get networks of preferred providers or those that can join to get to qualify for the more sought after reimbursement or funding of healthcare services and healthcare providers. So there are a number of continued challenges for states and local rural stakeholders. We are pleased that the national survey and what you'll see developed that comes out in Dr. Bellamy's presentation supports and will support hopefully you as you make your case for programs, training grants, and other programs that will help you improve your infrastructure. So I'll stop there because we're going to take questions afterwards. Thank you.
Yeah.